Well, you would have missed that as well if we hadn't had the offering. Lovely, sweet singing. If you were to ask me why I'm preaching the message I'm preaching this morning, I don't think I could give you the answer. But some years ago, I was asked to preach at the funeral of a young missionary who'd taken his own life. And I preached from Job chapter 23. And these notes have been lying stuffed away in the archive for some time. And during the week, I was looking through some stuff, and I came across the notes of this message that I preached those many years ago. And for some reason or other, I felt I ought to bring that message to you this morning. Not that I'm thinking you're all ready to go out and take your own life or anything like that, but I believe it has a relevance for all of us. And I believe it has a relevance probably for someone here this morning. The book of Job is an interesting book, and if you know anything about Job, he suffered horrendous difficulties. 10 funerals left his home in the one day. 10 coffins were carried from his home. He lost everything. He was a wealthy man, but lost it all. We find him in an old dung heap outside the city of Jerusalem, scraping the raw skin from his body. He soars from top to bottom. And of course, the worst thing probably that ever happened to Job was that 7 of his friends came to see him. And they sat for 7 days and 7 nights and never said a single word. So dreadful was that man's experience. He said himself, "Man is born of woman as a few days and he's full of trouble." And Job came to realize that. A French writer once put it like this: life is the frailest thing in the world, and it is. And another great writer, Thomas Carlyle, said, "One life, a little gleam between 2 eternities. But here's a man suffering desperately, physically. Man going through a horrendous experience, an experience that none of us would want to go through. And yet, for all that I know, there could be somebody in First Tohoku this morning, and you're going through something that nobody else knows anything about. It's very, very real to you. It might not even be real to your family. It might not even be real to your husband or your wife, your son or your daughter. It may not be real to any human being, but it's real to God, and it's real to you." And that's where Job was. The great theologian P.T. Forsyth once said, "There is no reality without struggling." And Job eventually came to realize that. And C.K. Chesterton once said, "The mark of a real man is to pass breaking point and not break." And I think Job was that kind of man. The first thing I want you to notice in this passage that I read to you this morning is this: the pressures of life are sometimes difficult to bear. In verses 1 and 2, Job says, "And Job answered and said, 'Even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning. It's more than I can bear.'" And over in chapter 10 and verse 1, he says, "My soul is weary of my life. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul." The pressures of life are sometimes difficult to bear. Probably all of us realize that. No matter how minute that pressure may have been, at the time it was extremely difficult to bear. And maybe as you sit in church this morning, you're struggling with something that's difficult to bear. The pressures that Job found difficult to bear were factual. They were not just his imagination, they were factual. This man's complaints were real. He wasn't some kind of hypochondriac that felt he had every disease in the world. No, these were factual sufferings that Job was going through. Try to tell Job that it's only his imagination. It wouldn't work. Thousands and thousands of people across the world this morning and in many communities are dealing with pressures of life. that are difficult to bear, and they're real men and women. They're not fiction. They're real. Christians have problems too. I used to use a little book when I was in pastoral work for those who had bereavements in their home, and the title of that little book was Christians Grieve Too. And the fact that you're in Christ this morning, the fact that you're born again of the Spirit of God, doesn't make you immune from what Job is going through right now. Pressures of life, difficult to bear, and they're factual. An old Puritan once said this: one son had God without sin, but none without sorrow. But the pressures that Job found difficult to bear were not only factual, they were continual. Notice what he says: even today, yet another day, these troubles come. There's no let up, there's no respite, there's no remission. No matter how loud Job groaned or complained, it was still with him. Day after day after day, there was no escape route, there was no way out. As John Calvin described them, they were uninterrupted afflictions. And how true that was. They were continual. Maybe there's somebody in the congregation this morning, and your troubles and the pressures of life that you can hardly cope with are not only factual, but they're continual. They keep going on. There seems no end. What did his friends do for him? Practically nothing. Job is suffering continually. Job is facing pressures in life that will not stop. They're not going to stop as far as Job's concerned. There's no time limit to them. He has no idea when he'll get through this. It's just the same day after day, and the pressures are wearing him down. And even his wife comes to him at one occasion and says, Job, you'd be far better to curse God and die. He says, you're speaking like one of the foolish women. And the scripture says that in all this, Job sinned not against the Lord. You know, the pressures of life that Job found difficult to bear were not only factual and continual, they were distressful. If you look at verse 2, he says, even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning. It's heavier than I can bear. I wonder if you've ever been there, friend. I wonder if you've ever been to a place where you say, look, what I'm going through is such that I can't bear it anymore. I've reached the end of the road. The psalmist said, if it had not been the Lord that stood with me, I would have fainted. I would have fallen. And here's a man, his pressures, the pressures of life that he's under, are distressful. Remember the great prophet Elijah? He lay under the juniper tree, and his pressures of life were so great. He says, God, I want to die. Have you ever met anybody like that? I've met quite a few throughout my life who didn't want to live any longer. The pressures of life were so great. They were so continual. They were so factual. They were so distressful. Think of a man like John G. Payton, that great missionary to the South Sea Islands, set off to witness the gospel in those places. Within a month or two, his wife was dead. Short time afterwards, his only little boy was dead. He buried them in a little grave. And he said, I sat by that grave and I thought I was going to go mad. And only for the mercy of God, I would have been in an insane asylum. That's how desperate life is for some people. William Cowper, who became a lovely hymn writer, suffered desperately from depression. On one occasion, he hired a coachman to take him to the River Ouse to drown himself. The coachman managed to lose his way, I think purposely, and brought him back to where they'd left. And as a result of that experience, William Cowper wrote the words of that great hymn, God moves in mysterious ways, our wonders to perform. And the last verse reads like this, yet ye fearful saints fresh courage take, the clouds you so much dread are big with mercies and will break with blessings on your heads. Here's a man in the pressures of life are proving almost too difficult to bear. They're factual, they're continual, and they're distressful. Maybe in the silence of your heart, you're saying this morning, God knows, Mr. Shaw, that's just where I'm at. That's the very spot I'm at this morning. It's hardly worthwhile going on. But you know, the second thing I see here in this chapter, as far as Job was concerned, not only were the pressures of life proving too difficult to bear, but the presence of God is sometimes difficult to sense. Look what he says in chapter 23 and verse 3. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. Verse 8, I go forward, but he's not there. I go backward, but I can't perceive him. Verse 9, on the left hand and where he works, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, that I cannot see him. Not only are the pressures of life sometimes difficult to bear, but the presence of God is sometimes difficult to sense. Job said, I wish I could find him. I wish I could find him. It would appear that Job is going through a period when God seems to be at a distance. Now, I want you to note, first of all, that Job had lost the sense of the presence of God. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. Listen, he hadn't lost God, but he'd lost the sense of the presence of God. Have you lost a sense of the presence of God this morning? Job had lost that precious sense of the presence of the living God. And many saints throughout the ages have reached that same place as well. Elijah under the juniper tree, he said, it is enough, take my life away. The psalmist cried, my God, why have you forsaken me? John Bunyan, if ever you read John Bunyan's great book, Grace Abounding to the Chief of Sinners, I tell you, friend, read that book if you can get it, if you're at a low point. That man went through desperation because he felt God had forsaken him. The great author of Pilgrim's Progress, a man who endured years in prison for the sake of the gospel, writing that God couldn't be found. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. Job had lost the sense of the presence of God. Murray McShane, that great godly Scottish Presbyterian saint, he said, at the very time when I was beginning to give up in despair, God gave me tokens of his presence. And Jesus himself, of course, said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Job had lost the sense of the presence of God. Have you lost that sense this morning? God seems a million miles away. You get down to pray and the heavens are like brass. You try to cry to God and he seems far, far distant. You've lost the sense of the presence of God. The ark, as it were, is gone. That symbol of the presence of God. But secondly, not only has he lost a sense of the presence of God, but Job longs for a sense of the presence of God. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. I want to tell you this, friend. If you long for a sense of the presence of God this morning, God hasn't forsaken you. The very longing is an evidence that God is still there. The very yearning for God is proof that God has not abandoned you. If he had abandoned you, you wouldn't even be interested. And Job may have lost a sense of God's presence, but he hadn't lost his longing to feel that presence again. And if you have lost the longing, I would be very concerned about you. One of the greatest preachers that God ever gave to Britain was a Methodist preacher called Dr. W.E. Sangster. He was a man that was used in a mighty way to preach the gospel and to preach at some great events in the nation's life. He ministered for many years at the famous Central Halls, Methodist Central Halls in London, to large crowds. But very early one Sunday morning, someone noticed a light in his study at Westminster Central Halls. They made their way in and made their way up to his study, and there they found the famous, great preaching Dr. W.E. Sangster sitting at his desk with his head in his hands, and he was in despair. And the questioner said to Dr. Sangster, "Dr. Sangster, is there something wrong?" "Yes," he says, "there is. God has left me." And the questioner was a wise man, and he said, "Dr. Sangster, do you long for God?" "Oh," he says, "that's the trouble." He says, "I long for God, but I can't find him." "Well," said the questioner, "God hasn't left you. If you long for him." And here's Job, and he's not only lost a sense of the presence of God, but he's longing for that sense of the presence of God. When I was a student in Edinburgh, I shared accommodation with a young man from the island of Lewis. He was about 6'6" in height. He had been in the Grenadier Guards. He was a brilliant scholar. He'd been to Glasgow, studied at Glasgow, and became an expert in Greek and Hebrew. He was heading out to the mission field of Yemen. We hear a lot about it in the news today, but in those days, missionaries were there. And he'd come to Edinburgh, and he was studying Arabic so that he could speak the language of the people. But I never forget this. I never forget that young man saying to me, "You know, brother," he said, "I was converted in the Lewis Revival. I could have preached in those days in the island of Lewis. But," he said, "I've got away from God. I've lost a sense of the presence of God. I've lost it. And I feel so far from the fold that I can only faintly hear the voice of the shepherd." Friend, I used to hear that young man at 5 o'clock in the morning away up in the loft of that place where we were sleeping, where we shared our digs together. And I could hear him crying out to God at 5 o'clock in the morning in that loft. I didn't know what he was saying because he prayed in Scottish Gaelic. But that young man found God again, all 6'6" of him. And he became a missionary in the Yemen. And William Cowper in his great hymn says, "Return, O holy dove, return, sweet messenger of rest. I hate those things that made thee mourn and drove thee from my breast." But you know, Job had not only lost that sense of the presence of God, Job not only longs for that sense of the presence of God, but Job looks for that sense of the presence of God. Look at verse 8. He said, "I go forward, but he's not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, and I cannot see him." Job seems to be looking for God in every direction. He seems to be longing for God, sure, but he's looking for him. He's not sitting back, idly letting the situation be. This is what's called the dark hours of the soul, men and women, when feeling forsaken of God and longing for God and looking for God, but we can't find him. That's the dark hours of the soul. C.S. Lewis was grieving over the death of his wife, and he spoke a little bit like Job. And here's what Lewis wrote. It's rather long, but I'm going to read it to you. "Meanwhile, where is God?" says C.S. Lewis. This is one of the most disquieting symptoms when you are happy, so happy, that you have no sense of needing him, so happy that you are tempted to feel his claims upon you are an interruption. If you remember yourself and turn to him with gratitude and praise, you will be, or so it seems, welcome with open arms. But go to him, says Lewis, when your need is desperate, when all help is vain, and what do you find? A door slammed on your face, a sound of bolting of the inside after the silence. You may as well turn away. The longer you wait, the more emphatic the silence will become. What does this mean? I think Job was there. The more he looks, God seems to be absent. The more he longs, God doesn't seem to be paying any attention. The more he cries out, it seems as if God is silent. And as C.S. Lewis described it, the door slammed on your face. There are times when it might feel like that. Was it Philip Yancey who wrote a book entitled, Where is God When It Hurts? You know the truth, men and women, God was there all the time. He was there all the time. He's working out his purposes. If he hides his face, there's something greater that he's doing for us. And here's Job, and he's really struggling. I can remember a time in my own life when I went through a period like this. God was miles away. I couldn't find him anywhere. I was young. I felt the absence of God. I was driving from Ballymena one night to Belfast. It was a beautiful night. It was long before the M2 motorway was made or any of these things. And all the way to Belfast, the light was shining in the car window. But when I reached Glengormley and had to go down the Antrim Road past Bellevue Zoo, suddenly it clicked with me that the sun wasn't shining in through the car anymore. And God seemed to say to me, you don't feel the sun, but the sun's still shining back there of the Cave Hill. And you don't feel my presence, said God, but I'm still there. I'm still real. The pressures of life are sometimes difficult to bear. The presence of God is sometimes difficult to sense. The third thing is this, friend, the providence of God is sometimes difficult to understand. Job didn't understand why God was allowing him to go through this. Job couldn't give answers to why God was allowing him to go through this. He knew God was allowing. He knew there was a purpose in it. And as I say, the providences of God are sometimes difficult to understand. What's it all for? It's easy as a Christian to throw up your head and say, there's no point. God doesn't care. He's an irrelevance in my life. Abandon him. But you know, God is working out his purposes when that spirit grips your heart. He's doing something so wonderful that you couldn't describe it. When I was 23 years of age, I was involved in a very serious motorcycle accident. I was in God's work. I was conducting missions, saying God bless. In the midst of it, I was put in hospital for 6 solid months. Never was off my back for 6 solid months. I tell you, I questioned God. Many a night I buried my head in the pillow and cried myself to sleep, asking why? Why do I have to go through this agony? Why do I have to go through this torture? Why do I have to lie on a bed almost tied to it with all the accoutrements that were around me? I've no freedom. Why is it that I was taken out of God's work when things were being blessed and God was honoring his testimony? I had no answer. But remember, Mabel, I'd only met her at the time, and she sent me a little thing from the pen of Isabel Kuhn, the great missionary. And it read like this, Thou art God when I can't understand. Thou art God when I can't understand. And here's Job. The providences of God are hard to understand, but he's still God when we can't understand. You know, it was the old Puritan John Flavel who said that sometimes God's providences are like Hebrew letters. They have to be read backwards. And as you know, Hebrew has to be read from the back of the book to the front of it. They have to be read backwards. My time's gone. Just let me try and conclude. The pressures of life are sometimes difficult to bear. The presence of God is sometimes difficult to sense. The providence of God is sometimes difficult to understand. But the purposes of God are sometimes difficult to comprehend. What's it all for? Well, if you know the story of Job, he sums it up so well. He comprehends this situation so wonderfully well, for he says in verse 10, he knoweth the way that I take, and when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. I'm only going to take time just to give you the outline here. First of all, friend, he knows the person. He knoweth the way that I take. He knows Tom Shaw this morning. He knows you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you. And if you're in Christ this morning, he knows you. You're one of his own. So don't despair. He knows you. He knows the person. Friend, his eye is not only on you. His whole being is interested in you. And Job reached this conclusion in the midst of his trouble that God knew. He knew him. Don't we sing that old hymn sometimes? My heavenly Father watches over me. He does. But he not only knows the person, he knows the path. He knows the way that I take. Folks, if you're going through the mill this morning, Jesus knows. And I'll tell you this, the road may be tough, but Jesus has already been along it. When he puts forth his own sheep, he goes before them. And he not only knows the person, he knows the path. He knows the roughness of it. He knows the smoothness of it. He knows the tangles. He knows the briars that are there. He knows everything about the road that you travel this morning. He'll choose the way for you. Sometimes it may seem anything but God's ways, but he's working out his purposes. And he knows the process. When he has tried me, when he's tried me. You know, trial is part of the Christian life. Some people will give you the impression that when you come to Christ, it's beautiful all the way, it's hunky-dory, there's never an up or down, that you'll be wealthy, healthy, and rich, and you'll be, well, just everything will be wonderful. No, he knows the process. When he's tried me, but he also knows the product, you'll come forth as gold. And Job came forth as gold. It says in verse 12 of chapter 42, so the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than the beginning. Before, Job had 7,000 sheep. Afterwards, he had 14,000. Before, Job had 3,000 camels. Afterwards, Job had 6,000. Before, Job had 500 oxen. Afterwards, he had 1,000. Before, Job had 500 she-asses. Afterward, he had 1,000 she-asses. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters who all died. But at the end, he had 7 sons and 3 daughters again. Let me finish with the words of this hymn. When through fiery trials thy pathway shall lie, his grace all-sufficient shall be thy supply. The flame shall not hurt thee. His only design, thy dross to consume, and thy gold to refine. The pressures of life are sometimes difficult to bear. The presence of God is sometimes difficult to sense. The providence of God are sometimes difficult to understand, but the purposes of God are sometimes difficult to comprehend, but they're wonderful at the end. And may God bless you. We're going to sing in closing.